On this 52nd annual Earth Day, we focus on regenerative agriculture and hear from a pair of cattle farmers on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Regenerative farming practices, they have the potential to improve soil health, to restore biodiversity, reduce our climate impact. The Natural Resources Defense Council describes it as farmers growing in harmony with nature. Join in with your questions on regenerative agriculture practices, 800-642-1234. Let's hear from you. Rachel Baressa is a fifth-generation farmer operating the Baressa Family Farm in Waupaca County in the east central part of our state, vice president of Grassworks. That's a nonprofit network of farmers practicing managed grazing. Rachel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. I'm really excited to be here.
Good morning.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you, too. We also have farmer Kirsten Jersik, who is general manager of Bratsett Family Farm in Jefferson County in southeastern Wisconsin. Grazing specialist as well, counseling farmers on regenerative practices. Kirsten, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Well, regenerative ag is a bit of a squishy term, somewhat hard to pin down what exactly is holistic management on the farm. And I really want to hear from both of you on how you see regenerative agriculture, what it means to you on your farm. And Kirsten, if you would go first, please.
Sure. So to me, regenerative agriculture is mimicking the natural cycles that happened before we were here on the landscape. So emulating what naturally happened before the human disturbed the landscape with the plow. So we practice managed rotational grazing. We move our livestock across the landscape in a very systematic way.
So managed rotational grazing, moving the livestock maybe once a day, multiple times a day. So that, you know, there's definitely kind of working with the land there. Rachel, what does this term mean to you?
I guess when I think of regenerative agriculture, it's the goal is to improve the ecological function of our agricultural systems. So soil-focused farming. Using healthy functioning soils to have healthy functioning pasture communities, and then animals, and then healthy products for our customers.
It sounds really ideal. And I'm wondering, Rachel, if you could kind of take us on a tour of your farm. How many head of cattle? How are they living? What does the acreage look like?
Sure. So my farm is 120 acres total that I manage on. I started with 15 with my goal of doubling every 3 years, so I've been on that trajectory. The bulk of my land is in cool season perennial pastures, with legumes and forbs also being key components of that diverse community. And then I've got about 60 head of cattle and a small herd of goats. This time of the year, we're still in outwintering mode, so we do winter bale feeding to keep that organic matter out in the field, as well as all those nutrients out there. The grazing season usually kicks off around May 15th, so this is kind of that fun, exciting time where we're out walking in the fields and the clovers are starting to come up and the grass is a little bit. But then throughout the growing season, I move my cattle at least once a day. Each field's a little different. It's very much intensive management, observation. I call the grazing season the observation season. The cool thing with grazing is that you can kind of tweak your management each day depending on what you see and what your goals are.
So I wonder for you, Kirsten, what is your farm like? I believe it's 290 acres. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And so about 150 acres of our farm is also in cool season grasses and legumes, so perennial pastures. And then the rest of our farm is we have some prairie lands, so some warm season grasses, and then we have wooded wetlands, woods. So right now our cattle also are still living the winter life, eating some dry hay and just really excited.
Living the winter life. I feel like I'm still living the winter life.
Yeah. Really excited for, again, the grasses are coming on. The cattle are kind of looking on the other side of the fences thinking, grass is pretty green over there, but it's not ready to turn them out on yet. So in a few weeks, we should be back to our rotational grazing and warmer weather.
Kirsten, I think just looking at numbers, I think I found you had about 65 head in 2016, 2019, 110. What are your cattle numbers like now?
I know I have about 90 head.
90 head.
So we...
Yeah, go ahead.
We have cows, you know, and cows that have calves every year, and then we have a finishing group every year. So we're kind of a closed herd, birth to finish on our farm. Our numbers fluctuate as the seasons fluctuate.
We have Kirsten Jersick with us and Rachel Baressa. They're farmers, they're grazing specialists, experts in the area of regenerative agriculture, really taking it as a focus on their farms. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Kirsten, I was really I was really affected by the story of how you really saw your mother and what your mother taught you about the farm ethic, and how her experience of spraying chemicals on the farm just once. Can you tell us what happened and really how it changed your perspective of farming?
Yeah, well, I was just a child, but some neighbors had told her she needed to spray one of her alfalfa fields for weevils or they would take over our whole neighborhood. So she borrowed the neighbor's sprayer and did so. And in cleaning the sprayer, she was got some chemicals spilled on her and it made her really sick. And so she said, boy, if this is what I have to do to farm, I can't farm anymore. This just doesn't seem right. And so from that time on, which I would say would be like the late 70s, she never used any chemicals on our farm. And she, I guess growing up, my mother taught us to respect nature, and that's just how we have always farmed and lived our lives, treat others as you'd like to be treated. And it's no different due to Mother Nature than it is to other people. So,
what is your approach to chemicals today on the farm?
We don't use any chemicals on our farm. We use regenerative agricultural practices. And when we do that, we see biodiversity. How we just don't see any need for using chemicals on our farm.
Rachel, you had a particular aha moment, I understand, when you were getting your master's degree in sustainable agriculture practices and just the urge to saying, I just want to get out there and do the farming. I want to do it. What happened with you in getting into farming?
Well, I was one of the few that grew up. My parents were some of the first dairy grazers in the state. So I kind of was that middle schooler that grew up with the tenets of managed grazing that it doesn't make sense to spend the time, money, and energy to plant crops, harvest crops, bring the crops to the animals, and then distribute their manure when it's better for the land, better for the farmer, and better for the animals to have the animals doing the work. So I always had that in the back of my head. But then I went on to UW-Madison and did an undergrad in agronomy and went into the agroecology master's program. And yeah, I was sitting in the soils building one afternoon and we were talking about the barriers of entry into agriculture. And it was access to land, access to capital, and education. And it was just before that the dairy barn had burned down on my home farm.
I'm sorry.
So kind of sitting there thinking, you know, I was doing a very stats heavy grad program and just was really passionate about grass-fed beef from a nutritional standpoint, as well as from, you know, all the other environmental and agronomic benefits. And so realized that I could at least be a source, you know, what can I do to provide something to the community, and realizing that I had all of those boxes to check and that I should just do it.
I wonder, you know, there's this trade-off or this pushback, I should say, to 100% grass-fed beef, that it requires more land to produce the same amount of meat. How do you think about that argument, Kirsten?
Well, I think about we're farming respectively to nature when we're producing 100% grass-fed meat. So one thing that we're not taking into account when we're raising other types of meat is what is the socioeconomic cost of raising that meat. So we may or may not need more acres. As when we practice regenerative agriculture and when we manage our soils right, it's a cyclical situation where every year things get better on our farms. And so we are truly regenerating our soils and regenerating our farms. And I don't think you can put a dollar cost to that.
We're at the intersection of grass-based beef production, soil management, regenerative agriculture practices with farmers Kristen Jersic in Jefferson, Rachel Bordessa in New London, There is a place for your input in this food system and climate discussion on the farm, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. On this Earth Day, we're talking with a pair of beef regenerative agriculture on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The grass-fed beef movement is based on regenerative practices. That is, grazing cows are part of restoring an ecosystem balance as opposed to a feedlot system. Join in on pasture land. Your thoughts on this type of management of cattle, 800-642-1234. Kristen Jersic runs a 290-acre grass-based grazing operation producing grass-fed and finished beef. And Rachel Bressa's farm in New London is also 100% grass-fed and finished beef. They're with us for the hour on regenerative agriculture. Let's bring in Madeline in DePere. Madeline, hi. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm really happy to hear about this type of farming, and I think it's giving back to nature. I hear people talk about the decline in the family farm, and then they'll talk about the farm milking hundreds of cattle. To me, that's not a family farm. That's a Wall Street farm. And the further we get from doing things in a natural way, the more harm we do to Mother Nature, the more harm we do to the humans, and more harm to the cattle.
Madeline, thank you for that. Rachel, I'm wondering if you can respond there to Madeline on contrasting how you approach raising the cattle versus what you might find in a much larger corporate feedlot system.
Sure. I guess what her question made me think of is Wendell Berry is one of my kind of thought icons, and he's got an expression of eyes to acres ratio. In order to be able to really manage and work with the land in a way that is respectful and that you should, you need to be able to walk your land in a day. There's a lot of other kind of nuances to the decline of small and medium-sized farms, but grazing and regenerative agriculture is definitely a way to get more small, medium-sized farms profitable.
What do you do when the grass is less productive, Kirsten? How do you supplement the herd's diet?
So it's all about balancing your acreage and your forage growth to the number of animals you have. So we never want to put too many animals on too few acres so that we run into that problem during the growing season. We want to balance our livestock and our forage so that they match each other during the grazing season. And we also have integrated some warm season grasses into a lot of grazing systems to help us with that dry mid to late July few weeks of the year where we call it our summer slump when our cool season grasses aren't growing as productively. There are situations where we run into severe drought years. So last year was severe drought in southeastern Wisconsin. And sometimes the livestock just need to be removed from the pastures or put in a specific pasture that we'll be renovating the next year and fed dry hay. Mm. So during the winter months, like, we feed them dry hay. And if we have to supplement dry hay during the summer months, then that's what we do. But really it's all about balancing the farm and using proper management, leaving our pastures growth height good. So as we rotate our cattle across the landscape, moving them every day into new paddocks, we need to leave 6 or 8 inches of growth still out there. So when we're rotationally grazing, our pastures don't look like your lawns do. Mm-hmm. We leave a lot more out there, and that's just all part of the system where we're shading the ground. So even when we get those dry spells, we still have moisture in our ground for our cool season grasses to grow.
I wonder then, Rachel, can you then, if you have the 6 to 8 inches, if you have that larger growth in the pasture land, are you storing carbon then in the grasses to help offset the methane emissions from the cattle?
Yeah, carbon and methane is a whole, probably another story, another conversation. But yeah, it's that idea that the robust root system with a diverse mix of grasses will store more carbon, both kind of in the topsoil. And then the idea with the warm season grasses is that you're rebuilding that carbon lower in the soil profile as well. But by leaving that residual, you have that solar panel that you're kind of constantly photosynthesizing. You have an active solar panel, the grass is kind of continually working, and you've got kind of this resilient system.
It makes me wonder, you have to have such attention to detail, attention to, you know, what the cows are doing, what the weather is like. It seems like there are so many variables. Yeah, I mean, Rachel, do you ever go, oops, I needed to move them and I didn't? Or is it kind of like this, a little bit of a work in progress? How do you approach those details that can really make an impact on your land?
Well, that's what makes it really interesting. So you're kind of constantly observing what you see, what you don't see. I do a lot of just on-farm experimentation where I'll do, yeah, sometimes maybe I'll overgraze an area just to see what would happen and then be able to kind of see the difference in where I didn't do it. Gabe Brown is one of the big soil health guys, and he says he aims to fail each year and that you learn more from your failures than you do your successes. But I'll also kind of leave these buffer strips in between my pastures so I can see not just what the post-grazing looks like, the pre-grazing, but also what would it be like if I did nothing at all. So just any way that you can kind of add those nuanced observations. Agriculture is a very complex system. The best on-farm farm research is on-farm and anecdotal.
Hmm. Kirsten, join in here on how do you experiment on your farm?
We experiment on our farm just exactly kind of what Rachel said, by doing different things. I try not to intentionally overgraze. But if we do make a mistake, that's sort of the beauty of this, is we can come back in and try different ways of patching up our pastures. So if we were to overgraze, we could come in and no-till drill and just interseed into that pasture in mid-August to patch it back up. Or if we need to renovate a pasture, we might introduce a cover crop for a year to change things up in our pasture a little bit, and then the next year put in our perennial pastures again. So I think every season is a little different. Mm-hmm. Things work differently during different seasons, and just watching every day on your farm and knowing what works and what doesn't work.
We're talking with Kirsten Jersik and Rachel Baressa. They're farmers, they're grazing specialists, grazing coaches. They counsel other farmers on how to get started on regenerative agriculture as we talk about it on this Earth Day. You can join in 800-642-1234. Rachel, are there other animals other than cattle that could use this type of regenerative agriculture techniques? I mean, does this apply to herds of goats and sheep?
Yeah, definitely. I like to say, you know, figure out what use the animal livestock as a management tool, and then determine what your goals are, and you can utilize whether it's cattle are going to have a great impact, goats are great for browsing, chickens or pigs, basically that you can use animals instead of manpower and fuel and energy for a lot of different management goals. Goats are great for invasive management, and not only are you not using all the inputs of time and fuel, you're also creating a high quality product that can be marketed. So I've brought in goats on my farm kind of as that increased diversity, that they would eat what the cows don't eat.
Yeah, they're like batting cleanup or something.
Yeah, and they're fun.
And they're fun. How about for you, Kirsten? I mean, how do you see this beyond the cows, where we can use these regenerative practices with other animals?
Yeah, we can rotationally graze most animals, an animal that we can keep in a fence. So as long as we can fence that animal and have it respect the temporary fences we use within our pastures or be willing to build stronger interior fences, then we can rotationally graze most livestock. And again, like Rachel said, let the animals do the work.
Let the animals do the work, a tool in the toolbox, so to speak. We have grass-fed beef cattle farmers Kristen Jersick with us in Jefferson County, Rachel Boressa in Wapaka County with us explaining their regenerative agriculture approach, the benefits they see on their farms. Join in on how you relate to or you question the regenerative vision. What more do you want to know about it? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. This Earth Day in Wisconsin, we're talking about regenerative agriculture, what it means for our planet with a pair of farmers who raise grass-fed cattle. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The UN Climate Report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that came out recently, it discussed how vegetation cover and changes in farming practices could help with adapting and dealing with future climate change risks. Join in with your take on regenerative agriculture practices, where you see it working and where you don't. 800-642-1234. We have cattle farmers Kirsten Jersick and Rachel Boressa raise 100% grass-fed beef in their respective farms. They're grazing specialists. And here for the hour, let's bring in Gary in Ripon. Hi, Gary. What would you like to say?
Well, I'm wondering about money. Could you actually generate more money, make more money if you did it the standard corn soybean way and so forth that most agriculture is done nowadays?
Going conventionally, Rachel, you first. What about the income stream?
Sure. I guess I would say that a lot of the regenerative agriculture conversations are on profitability per acre. So that money component is a key part of the conversations. With perennial systems, our inputs are just much less. So I don't have a fertilizer bill. I don't necessarily have a seed bill. And then by being able to direct market kind of this higher quality product, you know, you're getting essentially making more per acre, per animal than you would in a conventional system, minus all the time that you would need to do and the fuel expenses of planting and harvesting and doing all of that work.
And the tractor management, all the things like that. Kirsten, what about you? What about
the iron.
Kirsten, how about you? How do you see it in terms of profitability versus conventional ways of raising beef cattle?
Being more profitable, a lot of research has shown that. And in addition to everything Rachel just said about less inputs and less off-farm supplies, I think the other thing to keep in mind is that when we're practicing regenerative agriculture, our farms are becoming more productive over time instead of less productive. And so the situation just keeps getting better a few years into rotational grazing.
It seems like, and along the lines of profit, it seems like these big multinational meat processors are catching on to this. They're getting into the grass-fed lines. I think I saw JBS USA doing it, Tyson Foods. Does that impact the smaller farmer like your farm when you see the big multinationals also getting into grass-fed? Rachel, you first.
Yeah, I think it does in a lot of ways impact us. There is a lot of work at the policy level to kind of bust up the big meat industries, but I think it's important for consumers to connect with their farmers too and go out to their farms. More and more people are even less connected to agriculture, where their food comes from. I also think there's a lot of opportunity within our state and within our local grazing networks and our local grazers to do a better job of aggregating and getting Wisconsin grass-fed products out into the markets and easy for consumers to get to as well.
Kristen, how do you approach that consumer piece?
So I really think it's great for consumers to know their farmers. We invite people to come out. Any of our customers are always welcome to come out, take a walk or a ride around the farm with us, watch us move the cattle. I do think when we have bigger companies talking about it, it does bring awareness to the topic. So I don't know that it's always negative. It might be a little greenwashing, right? But it does, the more people hear regenerative agriculture and 100% grass-fed, grass-finished beef, I think that's a good thing because it sticks in their mind. But buying direct from your local farmer, I think, is really important. And especially in this state where, you know, pretty much from wherever you live in this state, you could probably find a local farmer within an hour of where you live. So it's a great way to get out of the city for a day and explore the countryside and meet interesting people and see new things.
But Kristen, how do you know as a consumer that when, say, you're in the grocery store and you pick up that package that says grass-fed, what that really means?
That's a great question. And I would have to say the Food Animal Concerns Trust, so FACT, has a pretty good labeling guideline, because there's a real difference between some things that are labeled grass-fed. There's a real difference between that and meat that is truly grass-fed and grass-finished. So a lot of people their calves will nurse off of their cows, and they will graze maybe continuously across pastures throughout the season. That is not regenerative agriculture. And then those calves will go to a feedlot and be fed grain. Whereas on our farms where we're rotationally grazing the animals, moving them to fresh pasture every day through the growing season, and then feeding them dry hay, not corn, during the winter, they'll just have real different environmental impacts. Those practices do. So I think it's also just really important for consumers to come to events we have. We have a new group in Jefferson County, the Rock River Regenerative Grazers, where we'll be doing public education. Come. And there's groups like this starting all over the state. And come and meet farmers.
Catching on.
Talk to them and see our farms.
I want to just repeat, in case people didn't hear it, the organization that you just referred to, the Food Animal Concerns Trust, and that you had mentioned there as something that you can look for as a consumer into this, and they're at foodanimalconcernstrust.org. Rachel, I want you to jump in here on how you see labeling and grass-fed and how consumers should interact with what they think is 100% grass-fed.
I would, read the label. A lot of, I know the grass-fed products that you can find in the store, a lot of them are maybe Midwest labels and companies, but a lot of that meat is sourced internationally. My other thing I was going to say is if you're someone that wants something that's easy and you do meal box delivery to your door, there's a lot of farmers that do that kind of direct market option where you can order online and have it dropped at your door, and it's as convenient and easy, and you're going to probably quite possibly pay less per pound than you would at the store by buying directly from the farmers.
I'm going to reintroduce you to quick. Rachel Baressa is here. Kristen Jurcik. They're farmers. They're grazing specialists, experts on regenerative agriculture, members of the Wisconsin Women in Conservation. You can join in 800-642-1234. We had a comment here from Denny in Madison, called in, couldn't stay with us, Rachel, and they're wondering if there is a better way to determine whether cattle should cross streams or other small bodies of water. Denny is a stream fisher, and they've seen that the practice of crossing the cattle leads to soil erosion. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's going to be managed correctly. A lot of times they'll show by having animals graze that vegetation along the stream, it increases the strength of the roots and actually can hold the soil better, but it needs to be managed well and not continuous access. So there's a lot of people that do grazing plans that will work on that. Kirsten can probably add to that.
Yes, Kirsten, do you have, things you can say about what happens with those types of geological features when you're crossing streams or small bodies of water with the cattle?
Yeah, so we just have to put in proper stream crossings. And the NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, has cost share for farmers to do that. So we can definitely fence them off the creeks. We can turn them in real quickly to, like Rachel said, to graze down the grass and really keep nice lush grass growing there instead of trees. But then putting in the proper stream crossings is really important so that the animals aren't hanging out in the stream. The last thing we want to see is a bunch of cattle standing in a stream. But when we practice good rotational grazing, we don't have that problem. So it's really about the management.
Let's bring in Amy in Eagle. Amy, hi, go ahead.
Hi. My understanding is that a lot of these corporate farms use a great deal of antibiotics, wormers, and other chemicals in order to keep their herds healthy. And I'm wondering if regenerative grazing results in less chemicals in the animals, meaning the consumer is getting less of that in their meat.
Thank you, Amy. Kirsten, you first.
Yeah, that's a great question, Amy. Thank you. So they do use a lot of antibiotics and dewormers and things in those feedlots. And that's just the beauty of regenerative agriculture is we don't. And so on my farm, we have a closed herd, so we're not introducing new cattle. So the antibiotic issue isn't really there. So if we do have a sick animal, you know, we will treat that animal. But then the whole dewormer issue, when we're doing good rotational grazing and we're leaving that 6 to 8 inches of grass growth when we move our cattle or whatever livestock we have, the worms and the parasites, they like cool, moist places. So they live closer to the ground. So when our cattle are not ingesting them when they're rotational grazing. And also when we leave a cycle, when our cattle are on land and then they're off for 40 to 45 days, it sort of breaks the parasite cycle in the landscape.
Hmm.
For sheep, we need rest times more like 60 days. But they're just not ingesting those parasites. So every year when we do herd health, we do check for those, and we just don't have an issue on our farm.
Rachel, what's your take on herd health and antibiotics?
Yeah, I'd say 100%. Regenerative or grazing systems are pretty much organic because they can be. There just really isn't the need or room for intervention of antibiotics and dewormers. Like I said, healthy soil is healthy animals.
Terry now in Lake Geneva. Terry, you are a grass-fed cheesemaker, I understand.
That's correct.
What would you like to bring up?
Well, I don't know if the grass-fed meat people find the same problem, but we graze very few cows, Jersey cows, and we make cheese. But you really have to develop your own market. You've got big companies out there. You know, we're Deanic Valley, who claims that all of their cows are grass-fed, which we know for sure is ridiculous. So you have to develop your own market, and I think they probably run into the same thing, that if you get people that'll come out to the farm, they'll be customers forever. But I'm afraid that most people don't really care. In Lake Geneva, we have lots and lots of restaurants, and the restaurants like to talk about how they want to buy local. But I find that what they mean is they want to buy local from that great big semi that pulls up from Chicago once a week, and because it's just easier than dealing with grass-fed products or grass-fed cheese or any of that stuff.
Terry, thank you. Kirsten, how have you developed markets, your market, over the decades?
I guess we've developed our markets. We started doing farmers markets, and we would meet people throughout the season. And then towards the end of the season, we weren't going to be there anymore with our processing time. And so we'd say to people, hey, we won't be at the market, but you can buy bulk beef from us, or a quarter beef or a half beef, or if you have a real big family, a whole beef. And so we just use farmers markets, I guess I'd say, as loss leaders. And then once people taste your product and tell their friends and their family about your product, your market just keeps growing, and so you can keep growing your herd. So I definitely think one of the things of direct marketing is starting small and then expanding. That's what worked really well for us. I totally agree with Terry, and it's very consumer-driven. And so I think the more education we can do with consumers, the better off we'll be, because it really is consumer-driven.
Rachel, what about you and customer growth and getting that business piece established?
Yeah, and Chris and I are working with kind of new farmers. You know, there's so much to learn when you're getting started, from animal management to soil, you know, all pasture management to then that business component. So for me personally, yeah, it was kind of developing the brand and my customer base. And now once you get into it, you know, 5 or so years, it kind of runs itself. But this idea of making things convenient for restaurants and institutions and consumers to buy directly from farmers is kind of a big conversation within some of the farm organizations. And I spoke with a chef at a restaurant recently, and he said, "I will buy anything that a farmer brings in, but I am too busy to seek out all of these farmers." Mm. So I think it's important for us and as farm organizations to try to figure out a way to better facilitate and make it easier for restaurants and consumers to buy it directly.
Farmers Rachel Baressa and Kristen Jersick, they raise grass-fed beef cattle herds in Wisconsin on their respective farms. Farmers, join in on the food system. How you see agriculture changing, how you see cattle and the land, 800-642-1234. Let's take a moment here on the IDS Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Natural Resources Defense Council published a report yesterday on pathways to regenerative agriculture, saying that it's achievable, but it needs support throughout the food system to reach its potential. Still time for your thoughts, 800-642-1234. We have beef cattle farmers and grazing specialists, Rachel Baressa in Waupaca County and Kirsten Jersick in Jefferson County. They stay with us. Bringing in Chris now in Blanchardville. Chris, hi, what's coming up for you?
Hey, thanks so much. This is a great show. I'm wondering if there are opportunities to learn directly from these two women. It seems like it's maybe a heavy lift to transition to a system like this. And I'm wondering if there are field days or how people can learn.
Oh, Chris, thank you. Kirsten, you first.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. So Rachel and I are both part of a program called WeWIC. So it's Women in Conservation. I will be hosting a field day for them on August 11th. This year, and if you go on the WeWIC webpage, it may or may not be posted yet. It is also posted on our Rock River Regenerative Grazers webpage. In addition to that, we run local grazing networks. Rachel and I both do. So I work for a nonprofit called Glacierland RC&D, and we will be hosting pasture walks every month this summer, at least one or two per month. So it's a great way for farmers to come and learn and network with other farmers and get on each other's farms and see, one, what we do right and learn from each other, and also, two, what mistakes we've made so other people don't make those same mistakes.
Oh, I love that. Walking and talking the past, you know, just walking and talking the pastures. I think that would be really productive and really meaningful.
Yeah, and so there's a great place to see them all across the state. Grassworks has a great webpage as well, and they have a calendar on there that lists the pasture walks throughout the whole state. And I think Rachel might update that.
So yes, Rachel, we're going to like carry it over to you on that note. Go ahead.
Sure. I was going to echo with the Wisconsin Women in Conservation. There's an event next week, Wednesday, at Mosquito Hill Nature Center. And then all summer long, their theme is climate change and soil health. So they've got all of their events on their webpage. I think it's wiwic.com. And then I'm hosting an event with them in September. And then like Kirsten said, I'm doing a few different events on my farm with this idea that people just need to be more connected. I want to have these soil health conversations with everyone. So I'm doing a series of farm events this summer on my farm, burgers and bluegrass, and then kind of working through these soil health conversations and taking people on wagon rides out in the field.
Hmm. I want to touch on, you know, the role of the USDA and these, you know, conservation stewardship programs, these other programs that really help farmers get on this path. And Kirsten, you also had experience in the USDA's Environmental Quality Incentives Program. How did that get you, give you that footing to take regenerative approaches?
Yeah. So working through the ECRIP program is fantastic. The first step with it is the planning process. So a farmer works with a person like Rachel or I, grazing planners. There's several across the states, and you know, a lot of us are actually farmers ourselves. So we're mentoring and helping plan other farmers be productive and do things right. Then we work with our local NRCS offices, and farmers are eligible for cost share for things like installing fences, putting seasonal water lines into our pastures, putting winter waters into our pastures, actually seeding the pastures. So we know that perennial pasture is healthier for the environment than row crops. And so it's just a great program and a great way to help people get their foot in the door.
Oh, yes. Have you, Rachel, had that exposure to some programs that really helped get you established?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a line that said NRCS made my farming dreams come true. That is the advantage with grazing systems, is because you don't need tractors and all. For beginning farmers, where you can get cost sharing for your main tool, your main piece of equipment. I move fence and not the tractor. So it makes grazing really appealing for a beginning farmer, because that cost sharing is available for that infrastructure, whereas it wouldn't be in some conventional systems necessarily.
We're almost out of time, but Michael in Oconomowoc, you just want to give some props because you've been helped out by Kirsten, I understand.
Yeah, I thought I'd call. This is Michael Gutschmer at Three Brothers Farm. And Kirsten, I just want to give a shout out to Kirsten, because she's done so much for our farm over the past 2 or 3 years, helping us get into the NRCS EQIP program and get fencing established. And we're getting a well in this year because of her, and access to more of our land. And she's really facilitated our growth over the past couple of years. And so now we have a really high-quality rotational grazing program. And I also would just want to give a shout-out to all of our customers who have supported us through our growth and have bought our eggs in all the grocery stores and everything throughout Southeast Wisconsin.
Well, Michael, thank you so much. And we're going to end there. Kirsten and Rachel, thank you so much for what you brought to us. Kirsten Jurcik, farmer and general manager of Bratsett Family Farm in Jefferson County. Rachel Baressa, fifth-generation farmer, operates the Baressa Family Farm in Waupaca County in central Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.